You just lost your loved one. Now what? Welcome to the Grief and Life podcast, where we explore this new reality through grief-colored lenses. Openly, authentically, I'm your host, Nina Rodriguez. Let's get started.
Welcome to the first of a series of episodes that I'm calling The Ripple Effect, Conversations for Change. And here we are exploring pressing issues that highlight inspiring individuals making a difference in our community. In today's episode, we delve into the critical topics of fentanyl, overdose prevention, and harm reduction. And for context, I'll start with a quote that I found actually on the DEA website that says, "Fentanyl is the single deadliest drug threat our nation has ever encountered. Fentanyl is everywhere, from large metropolitan areas to rural America. No community is safe from this poison. We must take every opportunity to spread the word to prevent fentanyl overdose deaths and poisonings from claiming scores of American lives every day." So I thought that captures the essence of what we're doing here today, and it's extremely important to bring this topic out in the open. So with that, today I am so excited to introduce you to today's guest, Thomas Guerra. He's the visionary behind F-Fentanyl, which stands for Fight Fentanyl or Fuck Fentanyl, a Miami-based organization dedicated to lessening the risk of substance use through harm reduction and providing recovery support to individuals who ask for assistance. Thomas is an amazing man, and he graduated from Florida International University, FIU, with a master's degree in mental health counseling. He also received his bachelor's degree in psychology from FIU in 2015. And he's been involved even during his days as a graduate student, where he founded the Panthers for Recovery, which is a student organization dedicated to helping students in recovery. So you've been at this for a while. And then from 2018 to 2021, he worked as a therapist at South Miami Recovery. He founded the Miami Recovery Project in 2020, which is one of Miami's first recovery community organizations. And most recently, this year in 2023, he founded F-Fentanyl out of necessity in fighting the overdose crisis. His favorite accomplishment is being father to his two amazing kids. And his personal recovery has allowed him to be present for his family and help others do the same. I cannot think of a greater cause. So with that, welcome, Thomas. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. And I appreciate it. And I appreciate what you're doing in the community using this platform to break the stigma with the overdose and addiction.
It's so important. It affects so many of us. So I read a little bit about your background, but I want to hear it from you. What is your why with this, and where did you get involved with all of this amazing work?
Right. Well, I'm a person in long-term recovery since September 12, 2014. And so I've lived through, you know, multiple attempts at recovery, multiple bouts with addiction. And I've seen the effect it's had on my family, the effect it's had on now with the people that I come into contact with, that I help with. Having that same, that understanding of what people are going through, and I want to help them, because that's something that I wish on nobody, to go through that addiction. And the family, they feel it the most. Yeah, like you said, it's a ripple effect. You know, as a result of my recovery, and I started doing service, which first became in the form of taking like a 12-step meeting into a treatment center, mm-hmm. And then I realized, at that point, I didn't have anything that I felt like I had to offer, to, because I didn't have any degrees. I didn't really have a job. I was living with my family, and I felt like I had nothing to offer. And when I started taking that meeting into the treatment center, I felt like I finally had something to offer, and it kind of flipped the switch. And I need to do this. This is what I want to do.
And you just said, I have to go from here. I have to take it from here.
100%. You know, it was just, all right. Up until that point, I tried to go to school and failed every time, because I couldn't show up because of my active addiction. And, once I found what I wanted to do, I was able to show up, and I was able to get, you know, my associates and my bachelor's and my master's in my later years, in my 30s, and, work in the field that means so much to me. Because every time I would work with clients, especially when I was working at the therapist, mm-hmm. I felt like I was one of the clients. I was just like, I forget that I'm a therapist. Then I got to facilitate this, because I related so much to everybody.
In a way, that gives you an edge, if you will, over maybe somebody who hasn't gone through this experience, because fentanyl has personally touched my life, my family's life. It took my brother's life. So when you say it affects the family, I'm all too aware of what that is. And it's a very painful experience. And one thing I've found is that sometimes the people who have gone through it are the ones who understand it best and are the best resource for others in active addiction, because it's you can understand at a core level what's happening. So that's one thing. And then second, finishing your master's and getting yourself out of that is no small feat. So I always want to like praise and highlight and just celebrate all of those successes and anybody who's fought this very tough battle and continues to fight this very tough battle. You managed to climb Mount Everest, if you will, in your personal life and continue to do so. So kudos for that.
Thank you. And I definitely can't take credit for all of that. I mean, I showed up, but I had so much support of my family and people in recovery, and everything that I did, it was not original. It was just like seeing that other people had done it before.
Right.
That's what it really is. Our experience as a family member and as a person in recovery, speaking up out loud and sharing our experience, because there's tons of people that are going through it that are suffering in silence. They feel like they're all alone. And when we lose platforms like this and you share your story, it gives them the strength to speak up and get help.
And thank you for bringing that up, because I recognize that shame is one of the heaviest emotions that paralyzes people into inaction. And it is one, I would argue, the emotion that keeps people in the shadows. And this is not just related to fentanyl. It's just like with everything. Shame is one of the most debilitating emotions. And as it relates to fentanyl and, you know, maybe drug use or drug overdoses, it's such a taboo topic. And the more we keep it taboo, the bigger we allow it to get, the bigger problem it becomes. I feel like bringing it to light is part of the solution. We have to talk about these things out in the openly. There is no shame in talking about it. And it's extremely important for people to become educated. There's a lot of misinformation. So what we're trying to do is shed light on this topic and bring it out in the open so people can discuss it openly. I personally know people who have lost relatives to fentanyl or other type of drugs, and they will not say it. They will not say it out loud because there's like that pain, that shame, that others, you know, other factors that you don't want your loved one to be reduced to this thing that took their life. But again, that this is why it's so important to bring it up.
100%. Absolutely. You know, with the shame, it's just the way society views addiction, and they view it as a moral failing. They view it as something that was, maybe they came from a bad family, and maybe they came, you know, it's nothing to do with that. This is all a medical issue, a disease. And people wouldn't look down on people that have cancer or that have diabetes or that have different diseases. And it's exactly what it is. It's just that as a result of some of the consequences that come with addiction, people see it as they were doing it on purpose.
And they're not. No person in active addiction says, I am doing this on purpose. They want to get out of it so badly. And the operating mechanisms are, it's so complex. It's so multi-layered. And like you said, no one person does it alone. They need a support system and et cetera. There's this one doctor, I don't know if you've heard of him, Dr. Gabor Mate. He's talking a lot about, I absolutely love him and respect his work. And he, I'm going to butcher his quote, but it's something along the lines of addiction is a response to pain, right? So if you have a headache, what do you want to do? You want the pain of your headache to go away. And so you take, I don't know, ibuprofen, Tylenol, you go to sleep, you massage your head, whatever. You do what you need to do to get rid of the pain. And so he asks, in addiction, you don't ask, I'm going to butcher the thing. But anyway, he says, why the pain? The question to ask is why the pain? And that's the real question that we need to get to.
That's exactly, because people that have addiction or that have a substance use sort of will understand this, that the alcohol and the drugs was the solution. It was the solution because to the why we were using, right? So it helped us initially before it became a problem, right? And it was the solution to my the way I felt naturally, you know, so it was the solution. So when you take away the drugs and alcohol, then it's the real problem, because you got to face this head on, and it's a lot to bear without the tools.
And what you said, substance use disorder, one thing I want to highlight that I learned recently, I didn't know this before, but it's what I've understood as a people first approach to discussing addiction, right? So I, you know, a lot of people say, oh, he's an addict or he's this or that. And some people take issue with that word because it dehumanizes a person going through this struggle. And so what I understand is language matters. And in one hand, you're saying substance use disorder is, I don't know if that's the correct term, right? Yeah. So I'm learning myself. I'm trying to get all the words right. I think it's more important to talk about it at all, you know, period. But it's also very important to remember that there's a human behind all of this. And if and when we put the human first, we are more apt to be able to help each other and empower the person to get there.
And really what it comes down to is trying to give the people a chance before they get stigmatized. And when you're using words like addict or alcoholic, drug user, right, and labeling that person, and that's all they are. Whereas the words don't have that much of an impact when you've been in the program for so long and you've been going to meetings and it's like, well, okay, we identify. But like when it comes to folks that are not as been around it so much, when they hear addict or alcoholic, they're not thinking of the people in the meetings. They're thinking of the people at the lowest of the low of their addiction. And that's not what everybody looks like. Everybody's different. And that's why it's so hard for people to admit. You have to admit you're an alcoholic. Well, they're thinking of the, you know, what they saw on TV or what they learned. You
there's
know,
when an image that already formed.
Yeah, that's why they can't identify.
It doesn't always look like what it actually looks like in real life. It's in every social class. It's in every socioeconomic class. It's in every race. It's quite literally everywhere. Why is fentanyl so different than other drugs out there? Like, why fentanyl? What is the heaviness of this type of drug? Well, why is it so different?
The fact is that it's not meant for the way it's being used. It's used for terminal illness, you know, when people are dying to relieve pain, right? And that's the medical version of fentanyl. But the one that's being pushed out is, you know, it's not medical quality. This is made by people in the street, in the houses, in different countries. It is 50 to 100 times stronger than morphine or heroin. And the biggest danger is that it's being cut into things that it doesn't need to be cut into. It's, you know, cocaine and pills. And so people do not know that they're taking fentanyl. That's the biggest problem, is that people don't know it's in the drugs. And that's not an overdose. That's a poisoning. Right. That's homicide when people don't know. But for the majority of the people that are dying do not know that this is in the drug that they're taking.
I want to highlight that because I think the bigger issue is addressing how pervasive it is of a problem and how it takes so little. There's this image that's been circulating around social media. If you look at the tip of a pencil, it only takes that much amount to potentially kill somebody. The amount is so small. Whoever's manufacturing these illicit drugs they're putting it in almost everything. And I even read in counterfeit ADHD pills, you know, some people want to buy Adderall, off-market Adderall, whatever that means. Those are laced with fentanyl. So you could think you're taking one thing. And it, like you said, bigger issue that we're having is that a lot of people are taking something with a certain level of calculation in mind of the risk that they're taking. So in their mind, I'm only taking, Ritalin that somebody gave me, that a friend gave me. But you don't know where that person sourced that. And it could have potentially fentanyl. And that's part of why it's become the deaths have increased in the past year exponentially. I think as of last year, it was about almost 110,000 people died just last year alone.
Yeah. And that's the highest it's ever been ever in the United States. The way drugs are treated in the United States and the way it's managed, it's not working. The drugs that people get, you're getting it, it's not regulated. People are getting it from the streets, not from the black market. So there's no guarantee to the product. Like if you were to go to a store and buy a product, you can be assured that it has what it says on the label. It's probably been stepped on multiple times before you get it, and you're barely getting what you paid for. And so that's a major issue with the regulation of drugs in this country. And it's not to say whether doing drugs is good or bad. It's just that we don't want people to die. So we need some type of regulation for this.
And what you just said is also really important, that we can get caught up in the conversations about whether something's good or bad, or we can actually do something to save people's lives. And I think when we focus on saving people's lives, talking about them with their humanity intact, because this could be your mother, your father, your sibling, your uncle, the lawyer, the doctor, the, you know, it could be anybody in your community, yeah. in your family circle. You may not even know that this is happening. And at the end of the day, it's about like, okay, what are the potential solutions? What's working? How can we help? And with that, in your experience, what have you seen working? Like, what is actually working to either in harm reduction or save lives, both?
Well, it's a number of different things altogether. It's not just one thing. 100% harm reduction is necessary to even get somebody to a level of wanting to get help. Harm reduction doesn't, it doesn't matter if somebody wants to find recovery, doesn't want to find recovery. It's just about keeping them alive. You know?
So for those who don't know, could you like elaborate a little bit on what exactly harm reduction is?
So harm reduction, it's not a new concept. It's been used for years with different things like driving a car is dangerous. Putting the seatbelt on limits the dangers, right? You know, back in 70s, 80s, right? Sex and condoms was a big issue, right? Oh, no, we're going to encourage people to have sex. People are going to have sex. There's no getting around that. So it just limits the disease transmission and unwanted pregnancies, right? And limits the dangers. And so it's the same with when it comes to drugs. The drug war has been going on for years. There's no lessening of drugs. There's probably more, right? So people are going to continue to use drugs till the end of time. But how can we limit the dangers? That's what harm reduction is. And it doesn't matter who the people are. It doesn't matter if they want help or they don't want help in getting into recovery. It's just about giving them radical love. Like you said, mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, and we help them survive so they have an opportunity to find recovery at a later point, if that's their choice. And it's up to them. It's their choice. We meet them where they're at.
And what does that look like in practice?
In practice, it's really sharing about some safe use tools. Narcan absolutely is one of the biggest tools in harm reduction and reversing an overdose. And there was a bit all controversy with Narcan. Does it encourage drug use? It does not. People do not want to be using Narcan. People, when you use Narcan, somebody is in withdrawal, and nobody wants to be in withdrawal. But it reverses overdose and it brings people basically back to life, saves lives. There's also fentanyl test strips, which can test for the presence of fentanyl in pretty much any substance that is in a powdery form or like a pill. And you could test and to see if you actually got what you paid for or there's something added to it. And then you can make a better educated decision on what you're going to do. Being safe, you using with other people that can call for help, you know, and being able to know that this drug can have fentanyl. Let me start off slower than I would naturally start off with. Those are a few of the things that you can do.
You said Narcan, test strips, and overall awareness about what you're dealing with and how big the problem is. What is the importance of making Narcan as available as possible to the masses?
Getting people to have it as much as they would have a Tylenol in their house. Because if you happen to encounter somebody that's overdosing, can you help them? Will you help them? And if you have that ability to help them, if we want to save lives. And the fact that it's going to be over the counter at the end of the summer is a push in the right direction. I think it's still going to be a little pricey. I think the price tag is going to be like $50, which is still out of reach of a lot of people. Push in the right direction, but still, like, that's why we were hoping that these grants and these programs that are available to have Narcan and Naloxone for free across the United States stay being funded, because we need to get that out to the people, no matter what their financial status is.
It's my understanding that it varies by states, right? So some states do offer it. They have programs that are subsidized or, you know, supported locally. So we're in the state of Florida, specifically we're in Miami. So what you just said, I was not aware of this, actually. You just said that it should be available over the counter by the end of the summer. Uh-huh. At about $50, which is better than not having it at all. But, right. You know, it's not as available to everybody. Are there other ways for people to get this through other programs or, you know?
100%. And so like in the state of Florida, we have distributors that work with the Department of Children and Families. Where we're able to get Naloxone, Narcan. And the website is isavefl.com. If you go to that website and plug in your zip code, you can find the nearest distributor in the state of Florida to distribute Narcan for free of cost. We're hoping this program continues despite the fact that it's going to be over the counter. Similar to the condoms, we had just a free condom program. right? They sell them in the store still, but then we still have programs that we can still provide condoms.
So I'll include that link in the show notes if anybody wants to take a look.
And absolutely from us, F-Fentanyl, our website is f-fent.org. You know, we're happy to, if you're in the Miami area, we'd definitely be happy to assist you in getting Narcan free of cost.
That's amazing. And I know that you're very engaged in the community. I see you active all the time. You're posting on your social media accounts. Tell us a little bit about what you do with F-Fentanyl and like how we can help support what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. My previous organization was focused on recovery and people that were asking for help, that were, you know, are being pushed for help. Whereas F-Fentanyl, we are meeting people where they're at, whether they are asking for recovery support or not. And not everybody that uses drugs has a substance use disorder or has a severe substance use disorder, right? So we still want people that are dying don't necessarily have an addiction. Right? They don't necessarily have been using around the clock. They just are getting a tainted drug supply, right? So we're helping people regardless if they need help in recovery or not. We do the overdose prevention trainings. You know, we go to the libraries, we go to churches, we go to universities, and we do that full training. It's about an hour long, and we give out the Narcan. We also are very heavy in the community where we go out over town, downtown, Miami Beach, and we try to give people that are less fortunate, we give them hygiene products, food, of course, harm reduction products like Narcan and fentanyl test strips and, you know, wound care kits, and so that they can have the opportunity to continue on. And then a lot of the people that we serve too are, you know, living their regular everyday lives, and they, you know, use drugs from time to time. We went to the Ultra Music Festival and we gave out Narcan to people going in there, and you know, people just trying to have a good time, but you know, something can happen still. So that is our goal, to help everybody that uses drugs and not just people that are trying to get into recovery. We're fairly new, and we're kind of starting from the ground up. Started in March of 2023. You know, little by little we're growing. We have tons of Narcan. We're hoping that the fentanyl test strips bill, I know it got passed in the Senate and the House. We're just waiting on the governor to either sign it or it getting just automatically passed into law. It will be huge, because then we probably can get some funding similar to what we get for Narcan, so we can get large amounts. Right now it's coming out of pocket, and it's very hard to get money-wise, but if we can get that funded through BCF or through any other grant, then we can get that out on a major way and take it out to the everywhere, to the bars, to the clubs, and everywhere. I also do the public speaking on my story. I do trainings on substance use disorder, collegiate recovery, harm reduction. Little by little, we're going to be adding more.
I love it. And thank you for the amazing work that you do. I cannot highlight how important it is. Awareness and education for people who either don't know or are starting to learn about it, or somebody's loved one just found out they have a substance use disorder, or whatever the case may be, it's important to learn about it, because at some point in your life, I almost guarantee it will touch your life at some point. Unfortunately, I also want to highlight that you say meet people where they're at. That is so incredibly important, meeting people where they're at. Generally speaking, in life, it's always a good practice to do, but especially when it comes to helping, educating, saving, it's extremely important to be where the need is. And like you said, I've seen you guys active at the Ultra Music Festival, and this is one example. It could be, you know, somebody's on vacation in Miami going to a music concert, and they get exposed to something, God forbid, it's, you know, laced with fentanyl, and we have a bigger problem here. So that's one scenario. You also have the population who suffers from an active substance use disorder for many years, and they deserve care as well. And they need to be met where they're at. It ruins their lives completely, or has the potential to do so. You also have the people in recovery. You also have, like you said, you work with churches and organizations and universities. I know that you've had events at different universities here in Miami. So it's beautiful that you're, the word that I want to use is like attacking it on many fronts, you know, because it kind of feels like we're battling something here.
It affects everybody. And that's why you got to meet everybody, not just, you know, people that can afford treatment, people that can afford. I mean, that was my major move in getting into the nonprofit areas, because I didn't want to have to deal with asking people for money to get help. It was just like, no, we'll help them regardless. You know, that's really how it should be on a national or major level. So it's anybody that needs help can get the help that they need. And even if they don't ask for help, we can still assist them.
And you're a great resource here for that in Miami locally, but also like you could, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you and have more information about what's working, maybe they want to implement a similar program in their state or in their city, they could also get in touch with you. I'll put your information in the show notes as well. You said that are there any like policies or legal reforms that you hope will change? I know that you said that you're waiting for that bill for the test strips to essentially be signed. Is there anything else that you're like, gosh, this would really, really help if somebody did this?
Yeah, there's tons of stuff that's working at other places that can be done here. Safe consumption sites is something that, you know, I don't know if they're ready to do it here, but it needs to be done here. Implementing something to support collegiate recovery programs, you know, in universities, being supportive of having Narcan on universities and test strips on universities. I've had so many issues with universities that they have a lot of red tape that doesn't allow them to do things because there's so many people to go through. But, you know, that's a major place where you need to educate people. Those are the future leaders and being able to let them know. And man, when you go to a university, you like party, but you get an education there too. You being on a college campus, I was able to get anything I needed substance wise, anything I needed. If I needed to get a drink, I could go to the main part of campus and get drunk. But when it came to harm reduction service or recovery service, nowhere to be found. So that's a huge thing. And just making everything more accessible. It's just like when I worked in the private sector of treatment, the limitations were finances and insurance. People couldn't go through there. When I got into the nonprofit area, it was the availability. So people were on wait lists and it took a very long time for people to get help and people were dying while they're waiting to get in a bed. And so it's just like everything is not working. We need to do something on a major across the nation. I think the first order of business is to get the education out, make it available and break that stigma so people are not so reluctant to like, oh, no, I don't know anybody like that. I'm like, well, you'd be surprised.
How many people in your life? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it also affects like, you know, as a family member trying to help a family member going through. I was going to say, you know, the addiction part of it, but quite frankly, anybody who's had a relative who suffers from depression or suicidal ideation or any one of these heavy emotions that really affects a human being and disempowers them to take a hold on their life, and you're trying to help them, I know for a fact that there are some resources. The most effective resources are organizations like yours. But when it comes to like medical care or insurance companies, there is so much they don't cover, they don't help, they don't, you know, there's always a but to anything you want to do to help. And it's sort of gotten, I think, a little bit better with like a lot of the talk about mental health and, you know, health and wellness lately. But the road is still, I feel, so long. And that's part of why, one, awareness and talking about this is important, but also like, what specifically is working is what I want to know. And so with what you said, you know, about Narcan, for those who don't know, it's a substance that you can get that literally saves lives. It reverses an overdose and it is a simple, it's like a nasal spray, I believe. You could take it as a nasal spray. It's this little like packet and you shove it in somebody's nose, you spray it. An allergy medicine. If you have some, you can know it. But
so simple. All right. So this is not Narcan, but this is Kloxxado, but it looks exactly the same. It's a nasal spray and you're basically just pressing the plunger right there into either side of the nose. And that's basically the hardest part of using it. It's going to take 1 to 2 minutes to take effect and that person can be saved through that. Sometimes it'll take more than one, but basically it's so simple. You know, the ones we were using before were, you know, intramuscular and there were needles and it was kind of, people were scared to use those. This is so simple to use and it's readily available, at least in our area. And if you're in a different area, I would recommend checking your local RCO or your local health department. There's a couple resources on our website that will give you the national organizations, the National Harm Reduction Coalition, Next Distro, and overdose organizations that work nationwide. And some of them even send it out in the mail as well. So definitely check those out. You know, most states do have some level of Narcan distribution.
People are becoming aware of how pervasive it is and how, at the end of the day, let's just save the lives and this is what we got to do. Another thing is the testing strips, super easy to use. You literally take the strip and you put it in whatever, let's say a drink or whatever substance. Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Basically, whether it's a powder like cocaine or it's a pill, you can test for the presence of fentanyl. Just, you know, you want to mix it up thoroughly because, like you said, it takes the tip of a pencil worth of fentanyl to be fatal. And so you want to mix up that substance very good so that you can make sure that you can test all of it. And what I would do also, if you're taking, just say you cut the pill in half and you take one pill first and the other half later, I would test this one, this part of the pill, and then test this part of the pill separately too, because just like a chocolate chip cookie where the chocolate chips are in certain parts of the cookie and the other parts don't have the chocolate chip, that's how the pills are powdered. So you get what you want to make sure that you can test it all.
So I recently saw what you just talked about. I recently saw an image for it on Instagram, I think it was. And it was very fascinating because I didn't know this. Like, so if you look at a chocolate chip cookie and you look at where the chocolate chips are, imagine those are traces of, in this context, fentanyl. So you think you're taking one substance and then maybe the chocolate chip moved to like one half of the cookie and not the other. So maybe if you test one area, it comes out clear, but then the other area of the cookie is tainted. So again, this is how tricky and pervasive it is. And we're not discussing morality here. We're not condoning drug use at all. We are speaking to a reality of that a lot of people are facing. And at the end of the day, it's like, we're not here to discuss right or wrong. We're just here to discuss saving lives and best practices to do so. I want to ask you as far as like recovery, right? Like, what are you seeing that's working in terms of recovery? Because we just discussed like harm reduction, best practices, but also what's actually working for people who are living their life.
Well, what's working is giving people options and not kind of saying, oh, you have to do this. This is the only way. Giving people multiple options and for them to decide which one works best for them. And not putting a general definition of what recovery is to somebody, because what recovery can mean to me can be look different for somebody else. But the goal is to get rid of the consequences of the substance use and to live a productive life. If you're doing that in a manner and you stop using heroin, but you're smoking weed, I think that's recovery. Well, a lot of people would contest me on that, but the goal is to stop the consequences. And so, I mean, there's 12 courses, 12-step programs, but there's programs like Smart Recovery, which doesn't involve spiritual aspect or religion, one called Recovery Dharma and another one, Refuge Recovery, which uses Buddhist principles. You like the Christian program, it's called Celebrate Recovery, where you can go and it's very Christ-focused. Everybody's going to be different. And some people will go to a therapist and see a therapist on a regular basis, and that's enough for them. I can't knock anybody on what their recovery looks like because it looks different than mine. If they're getting the support they need, then I'm all for it. And that's really how we should approach it. Because some people won't even step into a 12-step meeting because they use the word alcoholic. And so like, all right, well, let's go in through a side door then. Let's go on somewhere else to where they don't use that word. And that way we have people have a chance to find that connection. I think the biggest tool in recovery is that finding people that get you, people that understand, and being able to connect and have that genuine feeling that you're not alone, because this person also has felt the same way. And that's a big aspect of like 12-step programs and any program in general. It's just like you're meeting people that actually have the same thing that you do, and you can get advice, you can connect, you could hang out. That's a lot of times I'm just hanging out with people that are in recovery, and we're not necessarily going to any meeting. We're just hanging out, having a good time. That's really what it is. It's just one main thing that I tell people is that when you want to be good at something, you find a mentor or you find a coach, right? So if you're going to be an athlete, you find the best coach you can, and you get that coach to coach you so you can be a better athlete. And you get better players around you so you can become better. When it comes to recovery, find that mentor that you see has what you want, and get those players around you that are doing the same thing too. And it's going to rub off on you. It is. I don't care how many times you've tried. Try again. It's eventually going to stick. I'm not a one-chip wonder. I didn't get it the first time, second time, third time. I have so many times that I've attempted, and right now I have 8 years. It's not an accumulation of just the 8 years. It's an accumulation of all the years I tried before. There were not failures. There were not failed treatment. It was all coming together to put me where I'm at today. And so if somebody has had a reoccurrence and they've go back and kind of keep coming back. Well, keep trying until it sticks. I tell people I know a lot what doesn't work. So that really helps me figure out, you know, what's going to work.
I'm sure that's also helped in your work today. 8 years is amazing. I know from learning about this that recovery looks different for everybody. And it frustrates me when somebody says like, oh, but so-and-so quit cold turkey. It's like, okay, well, good for so-and-so because that worked for them. And I'm very happy that that worked for them. That does not work for everybody, right? And so a lot of people have to, they say like relapse is part of recovery, you know, and it's just a matter of whatever works for that particular person. It reminds me of this one time, I don't know why this popped into my head, but I went to this church here in South Florida and then the pastor said, oh, I get asked all the time, what is the best Bible that I should read? And he's like, the one that you feel like reading. I don't care which version of it, like just which one are you actually going to pick up and read? Like, I don't care about the semantics. What are you actually going to do? So if you are triggered by the word alcoholic or whatever, or you don't like hearing about the religious aspect of it, then there's other options. If the Buddhism principles resonate more with you, then by all means, go that route. If you don't care for either, then go through the SMART program. So it's don't let these little things become hurdles in your recovery. At the end of the day, it's like whatever works for you, whatever works.
Definitely the thing that is definitely not going to work is when you don't do anything. Right. So as long as you're doing something, you're moving towards recovery. You know, just find anything, as long as you're not sitting down and expecting it to go away.
And another, you know, as a family member who was introduced into this world because of this systemic aspect of it, families need to understand. They need to become educated. A lot of families leave the person suffering from the substance use disorder to fix it themselves, right? Yeah. And what I want to highlight is that this is a systemic problem, not just within society, but within your own family. And facing that reality is really tough sometimes. Yeah. A lot of it has to do because you have a system operating on what should be, quote unquote, should be, whatever that means to you. And then you have one person who in a way is like the mirror of the family or the societal issues or the expectations of them or whatever. And they don't comply necessarily with that, or they become a mirror for, hey, this isn't working. And a lot of times the family doesn't want to look at it themselves, or they don't want to, or it's just tough. You know, I don't want to say they don't want to. It's just, it's very hard to face reality sometimes.
And it's the thing is, it is a family disease. It affects everybody. And, you know, in order to have the best opportunity, I'll give an example. In my family, my mom started seeking help first. And she doesn't have a substance use disorder. She started seeking help because of my substance use disorder. And she started going to a church program called Celebrate Recovery. And she started working the program to help her. And then it ultimately helped me. But I found recovery later on. You know what I mean? And so disease of addiction affects everybody in a different way, and family needs their own support. That's a given. And they need their own education. They need to understand what's going on. And then on another level, you know, it is also very traumatic to the things that go on when you're dealing with the loved one. It is a lot to deal with. And then expecting when the loved one goes to treatment, they get all this therapy, they get all these tools, and they come back into the same. Everybody else didn't do anything.
Exactly. So
they don't even know how to deal with this new version of that person, right? They need to be educated on, all right, expect this. Don't give them a hard time if this happens, just so they can have an idea of what they're dealing with, because they have all this information, and this is all the same.
Yeah.
So that's why it's important to get everybody involved in that recovery process.
And it is a process. One huge misconception is that, oh, well, they went to treatment, they should get fixed now. There is no quote-unquote fix. Like, I don't even know what that word means. It is a process. They did their part to get back on neutral ground, and now the real work begins. You know, like now it's going to be the lifelong journey, and that lifelong journey, it's not just the person directly impacted by it, it's the family as well. In our case, it happened many years ago when a lot of these resources were not publicly known. Some of the advice that we got even from professionals was quite frankly, quite awful and quite misguided. And the social expectations were completely different. And I wish we had this information back then. I wish we did, because it would have changed a lot of things, and especially with us. And instead of focusing on, oh, this person needs to change, the change always begins with ourselves. You cannot control other people, even the person suffering, even if they're your loved one, your son, daughter, cousin, whatever, friend. The only thing you can control is yourself. So I believe, and I know in certain things that did work, is the more I became educated about something, the more I understood how the operating system of this whole thing works, the better I got at being of support and the better results we got. Now, in our case, we ended up dealing with the worst case scenario, which was, you know, it took his life. But it was after a long period of sobriety. And I know that you don't always get this perfect outcome, which is why I don't wish this on anybody. I wish I could change it for somebody else. And this is why I'm talking about it. But the family needs to get involved as well. And we learned that the hard way.
Yeah. Thank you so much for, you know, just being able to share out loud. And I've seen so many different families affected by this, and everybody responds in a different way, or sometimes it takes a little bit of time before they speak up about it. People need to hear this. People absolutely need to hear this. And it's going to save people's lives.
And at the end of the day, that's the main goal. It's saving. It is possible. Recovery is absolutely possible. Would you say it's happening more and more? I think so. Like, would you say it's happening more and more and becoming more common?
There's upwards of 24 million people in recovery today. And that's a lot of people. And that's not all through 12-step programs. It's just every version of recovery you can imagine. Being able to be accepting of people's recovery. I think that's what's being is more accepting is the different versions of people recovery are being more accepted, as opposed to, oh no, I go to meetings. That's the only way of recovery it is. And that's, I used to think that way too. Yeah, but I learned over time that's not necessarily the case for everybody.
So any final thoughts, and anything that that we didn't touch on, anything that maybe I missed, or, you know, anything that you would like to leave us with?
Sure. I do want to share about a few things coming up, so people can be aware. We're doing overdose prevention trainings in public libraries here in Miami. So on our website, you could catch all the dates. The next one is in Naranja. Then we're doing Miami Beach, doing Hialeah, North Dade, and we're trying to get all around town to all the libraries. Additionally, we're doing some overdose prevention training at the University of Miami for students. And then August 31st, we're hosting an event. It's Overdose Awareness Day at the University of Miami, which you're invited. We're having a vigil and some guest speakers. And then for the students on the 29th, we're going to have a resource fair. And then finally, I think it's in stone already, September 30th, we're doing Recovery at the Park, which is a celebration of recovery. And it's going to be a donation drive so we can get some items for the less fortunate. And all that's going to be on the webpage at f-fent.org. And again, if anybody needs support or any needs a training at Narcan, they could also go to the website and reach out to us, and we'll be happy to support that.
Well, thank you for all that you're doing. That's a whole calendar full of activities. And I know that's just the beginning. You're constantly doing your part to make a difference. And that's why I wanted to highlight all of these efforts. I'm going to link your website in the show notes. People can reach you there. Is there anywhere else if they wanted to get in touch with you directly? Website is the best, or maybe an email?
Yeah, website or the email. My email is thomas@f-fent.org. You can reach me on my cell. I'm happy to answer directly, 786-387-5000.
Perfect. Count on me to be there for some of those events. I'm happy to support. And as a closing thought, I would just like to, first of all, thank you again and remind people that the more we shed light on this topic, the more we make a difference. And whether you do that publicly or just in your private lives, just remove the shame, remove the stigma, talk about it openly. There is no shame in talking about this. There is everything to gain and nothing to lose. If we have everything to lose if we don't talk about it. So we have everything to gain if we do. So this is why I invite you to have these conversations, to face it head on. And if for whatever reason this is affecting you, your family, your life, understand you're not alone. There are 20, how many millions of people?
Yeah, 24 million. Yeah, 24
upwards
million.
Upwards of 24 million people in active recovery. So there are resources. People are becoming more educated. And just be sure to reach out if you need help, whether it's with as a family member to trying to process and accept the reality of this, or somebody who wants to make a difference in the community, or somebody who wants to support efforts like Thomas and F. Fentanyl here in Miami. He's also available for speeches if you want to implement a similar program in your local community. So you can go ahead and get in touch with him as well. So I'm sure we can have a whole day's worth of conversations around this, but this is a good start. Thank you so much. And I hope to see you at one of the other events.
All right, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Thomas. Bye.
That's it for today's episode. Be sure to subscribe to the Grief and Light podcast. I'd also love to connect with you and hear your thoughts and your stories. Feel free to share them with me via my Instagram page at Grief and Light. Or you can also visit griefandlight.com for more information and updates. Thank you so much for being here, for being you, and always remember, you are not alone.